this committee together. And the first thing on the agenda is a public hearing on Senate Bill 540. And I will have a word and ask my...
Thank you, Senator. Senate Bill 540 requires that federally qualified health centers and rural health clinics, that I'll just refer to as centers, are reimbursed by prepaid health plans, are entitled to a full reimbursement by the Department of Human Services for cost of services for individuals whose services are administered by those contracting health care providers. Requires the Department of Human Services to pay these claims or request more information from the centers for claims within 30 days of the date that DHS receives the claims, and requires DHS to pay claims when more information is requested within 30 days of the date that the information is requested. Briefly, and I think Mr. Spate, who will be coming up, will explain this much better than I, within the Oregon Health Plan, these centers contract with managed care organizations to provide services to eligible individuals. The managed care plans often negotiate rates with these centers that typically do not pay the full cost of services because of the rate they negotiate. Under the Balanced Budget Act of 1997 and several other federal laws, these centers may be eligible for what they call managed care organization supplemental payments from the Office of Medical Assistance. These are rates that are kind of paid retrospectively on a quarterly basis, and it's kind of paid on a formula that provides a wraparound. Basically, the Department of Human Services pays the difference of what is paid from the managed care organizations to the centers to actually meet the real cost of whatever services are provided. There is a rather complex formula that's used to figure out what these real costs are, and a somewhat complicated reporting and reconciliation type of process that the managed care organizations, the centers, and OMAP have to process in order to make sure that the payments are done fairly and within certain timelines. Thank you, Senator.
Okay, thanks. I think I'll start with the sign-up sheet, and Steve Manella and Jim Marr, if you would come up and state the problem as you see it, and then later Barney will come up, and I will also call after Steve and Jim, Joy and Dave Ford next, and then Ed Patterson is also on the list, and then Barney. Okay.
Hi, my name is Steve Manella, and I'm the Director of Community Health Centers of Lane County. Thank you very much, Chairman Morissette and other senators here today. A group of us in Lane County have been working for a number of years to expand access to care. This is a very difficult task because in our county alone, we have 68,000 people who are uninsured, and that represents about 20% of the population, one in five people. We also have in our county a number of people who are medically underserved, people who are eligible for Oregon Health Plan or eligible for Medicare, but have had trouble finding a medical home that's appropriate for them. All communities across the state are dealing with the issue of health care. It's become paramount to the functioning of our society. It's important as a economic development issue. We've been very pleased that we've been able to start a federally qualified health center in Lane County. We have a New Start clinic as part of President Bush's initiative, and President Bush is wanting to double the number of community health centers across the country, and we were very fortunate to be one of the communities that were chosen for that. As a New Start health center, we've been in operation for a little over a year, and in that time we've seen over 5,000 patients and provided over 12,000 medical encounters. To date, we've been very successful in executing our business plan with a minimal number of issues, but the major issue that's arised for us has been one of cash flow. that's been created from the lag in the wraparound payment that's paid to federally qualified health centers. For Medicaid encounters provided by FQHCs, federal statute instructs Medicaid agencies to reimburse clinics at a minimum through a prospective payment system, a PPS system. The requirement is that they're paid on a quarterly basis. The PPS system provides a rate that approximates their cost of providing the service to the Medicaid patient. So the way that this works for community health centers of Lane County is we submit our claims to Medicaid Managed Care. We submit them to LIPA, who very promptly pays us, many times in less than 30 days. They pay us typically about 40% of the charges for that rate. Then what occurs is that we keep the documentation of what LIPA pays us.
Now explain all these acronyms you're throwing out.
Okay, LIPA is the Lane Independent Practitioners Association, and I need to say in my testimony that both LIPA and the OMAP office has been
OMAP
very
is.
OMAP, Oregon Office of Medical Assistance Programs. Yeah. I need to say that both the state
this is
and
it's an AFZ acronym free zone.
So okay.
Remember AFZ. Commit that to your memory.
So typically what happens is we get reimbursed about 40% of our charge, and then 240 days later, after the close of the quarter, we submit a bill to OMAP, and then OMAP pays us within 30 days of submitting that bill. While hospitals and clinics, commercial clinics, typically face shortages from serving managed care patients, most of them are able to shift costs on paying customers. Clinics like Community Health Center of Lane County serve uninsured patients, so we can't recoup that cost. Congress recognized that problem and required states to pay the clinics the full cost of providing the service. Additionally, overall, Medicaid spending on patients of FQHCs ends up being less due to the continuity of care and the preventive care that we provide our patients. I need to say that we're very pleased that OMAP, acronym free zone, Office of Medical Assistance Programs, agreed to help out community health centers of Lane County and agreed to come through with a temporary provision for our first year of operation. And that is that even though we still have a 240-day delay in payment, we're still allowed to seek payment on a monthly basis, which has helped our cash flow. With the recent OHP eligibility changes and resultant increase in uninsured patients, a combined approximately $7 to $10 million, two quarters worth of payments, are delayed to FQHCs. When you think about this, the quarterly payments from OMAP are approximately $5 million, and two quarters equals $10 million. And if you think about that, if community health centers and rural health centers were to receive that cash earlier in the process, we would be more financially solvent, and then secondly, we'd be able to provide more care to Oregonians. That that's money that's being left off the table for us to use for health care in the short term. The other thing I want to acknowledge is that not all community health centers or rural health centers have this problem. Those clinics that are located in areas where managed care doesn't operate, or in our case with open card patients, we get paid almost immediately from OMAP. So there's almost a, what I would call a separate but equal problem that if you're working under managed care and you're an FQHC, you have a lag time in your reimbursement. If you're an FQHC and you're working in a non-managed care territory, you're paid immediately. And, you know, it's my opinion that managed care provides a very good service to the state of Oregon, and that, you know, when thinking about this, it would be very difficult for the state of Oregon to adjudicate all those claims. But what we need to be doing is we need to figure out a better way of approaching this. Our request is that, at a minimum, we'd like to see the settle-up time on the wraparound payments be reduced from the current 240 days down to maybe 120 days or less. The ideal process would be having the ability to bill monthly and receive those payments more promptly. Ultimately, if we could come up with an automated solution over time, it would be nice if we could be paid on clean claims, those claims that aren't disputed after managed care pays us, to be paid within 30 days. This would allow us to maintain a positive cash flow, and further, as I mentioned before, this would allow us to add providers to our panel. We could see more uninsured Oregonians. We could see more Oregonians who are on the Oregon Health Plan and on Medicare. Finally, I'd like to thank the committee for your interest in health care. And in particular, I'd like to thank you for your interest in looking at the ability to expand access to health care through safety net and school-based clinics. Many of the school-based clinics and many of the safety net clinics are either federally qualified health centers or rural health centers. There are others that are free clinics that are not in this category. In the coming months, there will be an opportunity to look further on how we can provide care to persons with chronic conditions who are no longer eligible for OHP, and to expand preventive care to both OHP members and to the uninsured, thereby reducing cost of expensive emergency room and hospitalizations. I wanted to mention that other states have begun specific programs to encourage the investment in expansions of FQHCs. Particularly since this is part of the President's initiative, other states have been incentivizing communities to get new clinics going. You see everything from states that are providing grants to states that are providing bonding authority for new facilities across the country in relationship to this expansion of FQHCs. I want to close by saying thank you again, Committee Chair Morissette and the panel. And I want to tell you that, you know, this is a great opportunity for us to work together with you in the legislature and to work together with OMAP and with managed care in trying to resolve this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Yes, I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had mentioned that you were thinking about, you don't do electronic billing, is that correct?
We do electronic billing.
You do, okay.
Yeah.
With OMAP?
We do electronic billing, yes.
Thank you.
We will hear from Barney from the other end of the billing thing in a little while.
Okay.
Because that, I think that... I think it's a fixable problem. Yes.
Thank you. Chairman Morissette, I'm joined by Mr. Gil Munoz from Virginia Garcia Memorial Health Center. He's just going to prepare some information for you. So at this point, okay. I'd like to just go ahead
sure.
and introduce this into the record. I represent the Oregon Primary Care Association and certainly thank the chair and the committee for the time today and the opportunity to submit testimony.
I'm sorry. Did you give your name?
And my name is Jim Marr.
Tim Lockyer.
I'm here with the OPCA, in the acronym free zone. That's the Oregon Primary Care Association. A lot of acronyms in this part of the world, as you well know, so we'll do our best. Thank you again. Regarding Senate Bill 540, prompt payment for the federally qualified health centers and rural health centers, in our world known as the FQHCs and RHCs, my apologies to the committee. The Oregon Primary Care Association represents 23 federally qualified health centers throughout Oregon. We serve 180,000 patients, and we think this is especially significant, with over 800,000 visits each year. On behalf of these members, I'd like to thank you for your interest and your support of the issue impacting federally qualified health centers and rural health centers in Oregon. The delay in submitting and processing claims is an issue that causes significant cash flow problems for some health centers, particularly new health centers on new sites. As you've heard from Mr. Manella, the Executive Director of Community Health Centers of Lane County, it can take between 9 and 12 months from the date of service for a health center to be reimbursed. We all know what that means in our own businesses. The differences between the amount received from their managed care plan and the amount they're paid under the state's prospective payment system, that difference is called the wraparound payment, as Mr. Manella said. And for a new clinic, it's especially significant. You don't have a history of wraparound claims flowing. You're not, in effect, able to pay your bills with those old services. And this delay is quite problematic, a true cash flow problem. The primary issue is the systematic delay in batching or submitting these claims on a quarterly timeline. You've got to be complete for the time period before submission to the Department of Health Services. And we understand the system's complex and requires significant resources from both the state DHS and the health center to ensure that claims are, quote, clean and unduplicated. Both the health centers and the state have an interest in claims processing systems, or a system that's fair, accurate, and timely. The Oregon Primary Care Association has worked with the Department of Health Services in the past on these reimbursement issues, and we appreciate the department's efforts to address the area of concern. We support the idea that representatives from health centers and the department work together in the coming weeks to seek a solution. Appreciate that opportunity. The problems around the wraparound payment delay, in particular, the problems for new health centers. The OPA stands ready to assist and support that process as appropriate to ensure that a solution is reached that meets the needs of health centers and recognizes resource limitations of both the centers and the department. Thank you again, Senators, for your interest and support on behalf of Oregon's federally qualified health centers. And this letter is from Laura Sisolak, the Director of Policy for the OPCA. And with that, I'd like to introduce Mr. Munoz. I have some handouts. I'll get to the administrator. We'll get his part of the testimony underway.
Thank you. Gil Munoz, Executive Director for Virginia Garcia Memorial Health Center.
Excuse me. Where is that located? Hillsborough?
We have primary care clinics in both Washington and Yamhill counties. We have primary care clinic in Cornelius, Hillsborough, Beaverton, McMinnville, and a OB clinic in Hillsborough and a dental clinic in Cornelius as well.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about how this issue impacts not a new community health center, but an existing community health center. We have been established over 30 years ago this year. But this is an issue that impacts a community health center that is also in a stage of growth. And as you can see from the first slide, the handout that I've given you, Virginia Garcia has experienced some significant growth in the last 3 years. We've increased our patients by 136%. We're over 19,000 patients in the last calendar year. We have also increased the number of patient visits to over 65,000 visits, actually 70,000 visits at the final 2004. That's a 53% increase in 4 years. This increase has largely been associated with the president's initiative to expand the number of community health centers throughout the country. So we have benefited from that initiative by the expansion of our Hillsborough site in 2001, the expanded medical capacity of our McMinnville site in 2002, and last year in 2004, in March of last year, we opened our Beaverton clinic. So the issue of the lag time when you go from visits that are from 7,000 visit range, 7,000 patients to over 19,000 patients is a significant issue when there's a 9-month lag time between the date of service and the full reimbursement for those visits. How that impacts us financially is that although our balance sheet looks good and we're at about $1.6 million in AR for our balance sheet for this line item, on a cash-on-hand basis, we're at about 15 days. So about 53% of that AR is in over 120 days due. So this is carrying...
AR is...
The accounts receivable, I'm sorry, with the acronyms. So the... what it leaves the health center in the position of making it just barely from month to month with the revenues and expenditures from the current upfront reimbursements from the health plans and waiting for the wraparound payment to come in on a quarterly basis that reflects a level of activity that was 9 months prior, so a different stage of growth. So I want to thank the committee and the staff at DHS, who I know have been engaged with OPCA and the other community health centers to try to find a creative solution to this, because I know that there are technical issues that create some stumbling blocks in this, but I believe that we can come together to find a creative solution that will resolve this and stabilize the community health centers that have really stepped up to the challenge of providing increased access in a period of time, as we know that we have increasing numbers of uninsured throughout our state. So, thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Did you have a question?
Well, just a curiosity. When you go to your last page, thank you, Ms. Chair, your pie chart, I guess I was surprised to see that Medicare is only 1% of revenue. I would have thought it would have been higher.
Typically, the population at a community health center is a younger population, so traditionally we have not seen a very large number of Medicare patients. And the elder patients although that's a growing trend, we are now... in some of our sites, in particular in our Beaverton site in McMinnville, we are seeing increased numbers of Medicare.
Other questions?
Yes.
Yes.
I wanted to add, Mr. Chair.
Senator Lorna Sanderson.
I wanted to ask the same question I asked the first speaker is, do you do electronic billing at all of your sites?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Thank you.
So the upfront billing out to the health plan is not where there's really the problem. It's on the 9-month lag time for the claim to go from the health plan to DHS and then back to the health center.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And, thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Committee.
Okay, let's see. Joy Squires and Dave Ford, would you please go up?
Good afternoon, Chair Morissette and members of the committee. Thank you so much for hearing this, and especially to Senator Morissette for taking a leadership role in making this happen. For the record, my name is Joyce Juarez. I'm the Community Relations and Legislative Relations Representative at CARE Oregon. CARE Oregon is a private, not-for-profit, 501c3 organization that serves 100,000 Oregon Health Plan members. And when we look at, which is a large chunk of the Oregon Health Plan, and certainly we're the largest OHP provider, and we look at, when we look at our network and our members, what we realize is that over 50% of our members are assigned to primary care clinics that are safety net clinics. And so there's no doubt that these safety net clinics, like the federally qualified health centers or rural health centers or community health centers, are a key and are crucial to our success. So when we have, when those clinics are in jeopardy, it does affect CARE Oregon and the Oregon Health Plan negatively. And so I just want to take a brief moment to put this in the context of what the situation is for today for safety net clinics. As you know, there's going to be there is a huge drop in Oregon Health Plan membership, and there's a spike in the uninsured. And these clients are still coming to safety net clinics. So the demand is high, yet the reimbursement is low, and we're really putting these clinics at risk. And so what I wanted to do is Peg Crowley. She's the executive director of community health centers in Ashland, Medford, and White City. She was unable to be here today on short notice, but she has forwarded the testimony which you have. But I just wanted to read a brief few sentences to you to highlight how this issue affects her. While three communities, continues to be increasing efficiency and timely payment for Medicaid claims for our patients not enrolled in managed care. For these enrolled in managed care, there are delays of 9 to 12 months before our organizations receive a full payment for our PPS rate. These delays have resulted in significant cash flow issues for our organization and the need to borrow money to pay for these clinics and our operations. The interest paid for these loans could be certainly better used to support care for the growing numbers of uninsured in our communities. It is essential that we continue to be able to It is essential to our continued ability to provide care for our Medicaid clients. The current practice of making a partial payment to federally qualified health centers who contract with managed care plans, with a final settlement and payment of these balance of the balance of the organization's PPS rate being made 9 to 12 months later, is at best questionable and a direct threat to the continued viability of managed care service for Medicaid health plans. So what I wanted to do right now is turn it to CARE Oregon's CEO, Dave Ford, so he can give you a perspective on how this affects CARE Oregon and Medicaid health plans.
Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Dave Ford, CEO of CARE Oregon. As many of you know, I've been in the state a couple of years and took over a distressed health plan. What really came to the foreground was the work that we do with the safety net clinics, which is really pretty remarkable. I had not encountered the profundity of the work that these clinics do. We contract with them on the basis of a kind of a market set rate or what a managed care rate would be. And then they balance bill for the cost of that care, the full cost of the care back to the state. One of the chronic things that we've continuously heard while I've been here is the accounts receivable problem that Mr. Munoz spoke to. This is particularly problematic, as Steve and Gil actually didn't mention, but as he expands, that when you start up an operation, your cash flows, you have got a lot of front-end costs and volume growing, but with this built-in lag of about 9 months, it's very, very stressful on a very fragile infrastructure. One of the things that Oregon has is a pretty broad-based infrastructure for providing care for folks that are uninsured and also insured through the Medicaid program. And they're very, very financially fragile. As it's been related, there are a lot of technical issues in getting these payments made in a timely fashion. A lot of them, we've heard, relate to the small number of dual eligibles they have, as Senator Cruz pointed out, that there is a requirement to have things trued up with this population because they have to bill Medicare. Then we come back as a dual eligible, pay a small portion, and that has to be squared away in full and sort of have a perfect bill before those are paid. When they're actually finally allowed to be paid, they're paid quite timely, but it takes a long time before they allow the batches to be clean. I've just come from a conference the first 2 days of this week in Washington, D.C., with a group of sister plans like ourselves around the country, neighborhood health plans of Massachusetts and Rhode Island and so forth. This is not the same problem in other states. These are administrative rules, we believe, that are interpreted locally and a custom has developed. And we're very supportive of moving this payment up in any way you can encourage. And as we are in the flow of work, we would be any part of any kind of work committee to actually find out what we could do to provide supplemental information to quicken the process. And I would encourage the tail not to wag the dog, and that is, if there are a few technical areas where people are wanting perfection before we pay, let's get the 95% of the clean claims paid to these folks quickly. It's a matter of state integrity, I believe. And so with that, we'd encourage your thoughtful provocation of a quick resolution of this. Okay. And I think with new leadership, I think that the department is fully capable of doing that.
Thank you. And I agree that I think it can be done. And I appreciate the fact that you've been to conference with other people. I think that's one of the values of visiting with other states. We go to conferences and bring things back that are very beneficial, and sometimes we're very proud of what we do differently, and sometimes we're not so proud of what we do differently. But I think we need to find a solution, and I think it will happen. Thank you.
Thank you.
You volunteered to be on a workforce.
You bet. I mean, this is important enough that we would spend critical time on it.
Right. Yes,
sir.
Yeah. Okay.
Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does sit down. We're not done with that.
When
you mentioned dual eligibles and kind of what I was trying to get at, how much does that muck things up?
We think it mucks. We've heard anecdotally from the chief financial officers of the clinics, it mucks it up a whole bunch.
Okay, so any efforts we make in the course of the process to define and maybe move folks might be beneficial long term.
Yes, sir. It may go away with the Medicare Modernization Act next year. Yes.
And it may, right. So
some of it.
So we learned a new medical term, muck.
Muck.
No, that's a farm.
That's about a
dagger. Oh, that's a farm term.
That's a farm term.
I should have known. Other questions? Yes.
I'm asking the same one. Are all of your clinics, do they all do electronic billing?
In fact, what's happened is a number of years ago, we jointly sponsored an organization called Oregon OCHIN, Oregon Health Information, Community Health Information Network. Mm-hmm. And the first part of that was to put together a billing package which works supremely well in getting us the bills on a timely basis. All of that's installed in the majority of our clinics. And so we get very timely submission of bills. And one of the things that I worked on when we got here is to make sure that we reciprocally did a job in getting our claims processing cleaned up so that they got quickly paid from our end. So I don't think it's that front end piece. It's the supplemental piece of billing Medicare and whatever other business processes are required by the state to get settled. There is a validation process that's required between what we pay, as I understand it, and Barney can speak to this more clearly than myself, and the validation from us. And if there's a process that we could just electronically give a consolidated billing, I don't mean to problem solve in this group, but where we could provide supplemental reports that verified that, even if we had to attest to that, we'd be more than willing to do that. This is a very key problem for these folks, and there's many of them are scratch organizations, and if you can not delay that payment, that would be wonderful for them.
Chair Morissette, Senator Mona Sanderson, most of the clinics, especially the larger clinics, do bill electronically, but those that are smaller do not. And there are some, actually, there are a handful of providers, actually, where they don't even have computers. So you find a great range of abilities to do electronically, electronic billing within the provider network, but most definitely the larger ones that have high volume do it electronically.
I'll follow up then. You don't know what percentage then?
No.
Okay.
If you like, we could follow up with that information.
Probably Barney can give that information.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Sorry, did you want that? What
I think it would be very useful for both the Oregon Primary Care Association and Care Oregon to provide Senator Mona Sanderson.
Yeah, okay. Good.
Good.
And that's the anonymous voice of Barney Spate from the audience.
Can I ask a clarification question? Is it for all providers or just primary care?
All providers.
Okay.
I mean, it's my understanding that when you have electronic billing, it can happen much quicker.
Absolutely.
But when you have non-electronic billing, when you have to do it hand by hand, it mm-hmm. takes an extremely long time. So I had been working actually trying to come up with legislation that would provide incentives for providers to do electronic billing so that we could get away from this long reimbursement time, and it sounds like it's mainly due to the fact that there's so many who do not mm-hmm. bill electronically.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Make sure we include the non-federally qualified.
Sure. We'll look at it from a provider panel okay. point of view of specialist primary care.
Okay. Would you mind if we copied Barney in the results?
Yes, copy Barney. From some of the testimony, though, I understand that people have been doing the electronic. There are some who do the electronic billing,
yeah.
and so if it's possible for them to be paid earlier, that would be good. I understand that not everybody has the capacity. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Ed Patterson. Yes. And Karen Whitaker, would you like to come up, please? Scott, would you like to come with us? Yes, indeed.
Bring the whole room.
Yeah, bring the whole room. No, I figured that you had something to ask.
Shall I start, Mr. Chair, while they're getting
to you? Go ahead and introduce yourself.
For the record, I'm Ed Patterson. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Rural Health Association. Our association has a separate section on just rural health clinics as part of our membership. There's probably around, I think somewhere around 50 rural health clinics in the state, and about half of those are remote rural health clinics, similar to the one that you heard from in Yahats with John Zier, the nurse practitioner, testified down in Newport. And as you recall, his testimony was that they struggle. They've had cash flow problems forever, not just startup cash flow problems, but they are because of low volume, just naturally like any small business would be, would struggle with cash flow problems periodically. You recall what he said, he thought $10,000 malpractice insurance for his clinic was way too high, and that's probably one of the smaller malpractice insurance premiums that there is, but he struggles to make those kinds of payments. So we appreciate the fact that they have the rural health clinics in this bill, and it will certainly send a message. I think Bonnie already understands it, but rural health clinics do have a little different problem. And to answer Senator Melissa Anderson's question about electronic billing, even without her being here, I can guarantee you that there is very little electronic billing from the rural health clinics because they just don't have the equipment or the knowledge to make it work, so they do it by hand. I'm glad you invited Karen up here because Karen, I think she might have testified before in front of this committee that she has done a rural health clinic survey, and I think is in the process of getting the data put together, and she can address that. But I think that's going to show some very interesting facts about some of the difficulties the smaller and more remote rural clinics have in the state. So I just want to recognize, and have you recognized that, and I know you do, that there are such animals as non-federally qualified and they're certified rural health clinics. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you very much for inviting me up to comment on this. And
I wouldn't have you in the room without inviting you.
I too appreciate your concern about rural health clinics, and they are a slightly different form of delivery system than a federally qualified health center, and they do have some unique problems. We just finished a survey of our rural health clinics, and we're, as a matter of fact, it's ready to go to press today, I think, or yesterday. It went to be printed yesterday, and it will give us give you a lot of information about the rural health clinics in Oregon. But their situation is slightly different in that they don't deal with managed care as much as federally qualified health centers do. There isn't as much managed care in very rural parts of the state, but they certainly do have cash flow problems. And I've brought Troy Sonnen with me. He's a member of our field staff who spends most of his time out in the field in different parts of the state working with rural health clinics. It's kind of a nice thing to have him here in town, or at least in the valley this week, because he usually isn't here. So I'd like to introduce him, and he could make a comment about this particular issue with rural health clinics.
Troy, could you give us your name and the spelling of your name as well?
Troy Sonnen, S-O-E-N-E-N.
And your title?
My title is Field Services Specialist. My primary responsibility is to work with rural health clinics. Thank you, Karen. Senator Morissette, again, I would like to share my thanks to you for your interest in rural health clinics. I anecdotally, this summer, spent a great deal of my time in clinics, and I can share their thoughts in terms of there is clinics that certainly would like to have reimbursement much quicker. And as mentioned from our federally qualified health center colleagues, cash flow is just not sort of a problem in terms of startup. It's a year-round problem because these centers do not get grants. So any revenue that they're hoping to get is basically revenue that they're counting on to stay in business. So at the same time, I would also like to say that we've identified other issues in the recent past regarding reimbursement for OB, for example, and the Oregon Medical Assistance Program has actually been very willing to come to the table with the Rural Health Clinic Program to work through technical billing issues. So I'm sure that, or at least my hope is, that this would be one of those areas that we could all come together and rectify rather easily in terms of just figuring out some of the technical pieces. This was something historically that 3 to 4 years ago, when the prospective payment system, or public law 106554, was put upon us, we kind of all got in a room together and said, well, what's the best way to make this system work? And there is clinics out there, as we said, that do paper claims. So this time period was kind of something that we all originally agreed on. And it has come to tuition in the recent past for new starts that, you know, that cash flow problem is certainly a real issue.
Okay. Here.
Senator Morissette, I have talked with Barney about this, with Barney Spade about this. I'm very confident that we can work out some sort of an arrangement. I think he's very willing to accommodate the needs of the rural health clinics and the federally qualified health centers.
Good. Thank you. Troy, where do you work out of? Where are you?
I'm located up at the Oregon Health and Science University with the Office of Rural Health.
Then if we need to put a work group together, you'd be willing to be part of that.
Yes, I would.
Okay, good. And why are you smiling, Scott?
That would be an excellent person to work with.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, go ahead. I just have, Mr. Chair, I have a statement I'd like to make.
Okay.
And it's for everybody in the room, and it's kind of a frustration that I would hope that at some point in time, and not that we want to violate federal law in any way, shape, or form, that we could find a way to aggregate some of these small rural health centers so that as an aggregate they could be federally qualified, and I'm hoping that we can look very aggressively at doing that. If they're struggling for dollars, having that extra kick wouldn't hurt them any. So,
okay.
You know, there's got to be a way to do that.
Good scheme. So, I mean, good idea.
Yeah, Senator Morissette, Senator Cruz, that it's a very good idea to work with a network of clinics, for example, who could apply as a network rather than singly and then possibly qualify for that program. So, we'll work with you on that.
Okay,
good idea. Thank you. Mr. Spate, would you come up, please? We're only going to do this part of the agenda today. I don't know if any of you are here for part two that Mr. Spate was going to get start into, but we're...
Mr. Chair, I'm not, so...
Oh, okay, you didn't come for that part. Okay. But we thought we could do that another day because this would only be kind of an introduction to it, so we will finish this part of the agenda. And if any of you want to have a second shot at it after Barney talks, you may do that. So go ahead, Mr. Spate.
Mr. Chairman, Barney Spade, Administrator of the Office of Medical Assistance Programs, Department of Human Services. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on Senate Bill 540. First, let me say that the Department of Human Services and the Office of Medical Assistance Programs takes very seriously the relationship that we have with the safety net provider system generally, rural health clinics, federally qualified health clinics, and others, because we understand the important role they play, not only as a central delivery, a central system of delivery for the Oregon Health Plan, but for communities generally, for the uninsured. And I appreciate, particularly as a newcomer to the Office of Medical Assistance Program, to hear both publicly and privately some of the comments that have been made about the office's staff, because I've gotten the impression in 99 days that, who's counting, that several of the staff people within the office have worked very diligently with the federally qualified clinics, both those that are existing and those that have started up, and in areas of trying to discern complex federal and state policy, how to help them with billing practices, and then finally the issue today is how to help in the whole issue of reimbursement and settlement under the what's known as the wraparound payment. But I will share with them these comments and compliment them and redouble their efforts that we work together on this. What I'd like to do today is to give you an overview. You've heard, I think, a pretty good overview from the previous testifiers, but to give you an overview of kind of how we see this process, and then and what we have to do within the process, and then I would clearly state what others have said, that whether a bill or not is necessary, we can wait for some work group, but I think it's very important that we get the interested parties together, because there are probably several solutions that are possible. I don't know today which ones are the most, which one might be the best. We've heard about the claims, the claim payment or claim settlement lag. And I think this is primarily an issue, because you heard earlier that if a federally qualified health center, particularly if they have electronic billing, get a full reimbursement, their reasonable cost-based reimbursement, very quickly. And that was stated by at least a couple of the people before me. The issue does arise, however, and Dave Ford spoke to it, that when they have contractual relationships with our fully capitated health plans, our managed care organizations in the state, they work out a contractual relationship with that health plan that is arm's length negotiation. They decide among themselves how much the managed care organization will pay them, and someone used the term market, and I think that's a good descriptor of they'll get paid so much. Under the federal law, and we administer this on behalf of Medicaid, those clinics are then entitled to a supplemental payment that would bring them up to the full reasonable cost basis for that encounter. We call that an encounter rate. And I'll just and someone indicated that they may get about 40% from their contractual relationship with the managed care organization, and their supplemental payment for that encounter. We would then pay a wraparound of 60%, bringing them up to their full cost. There is a series of events that happen in this process. Quickly, and this is outlined here, and the dates here are kind of the longest contractually allowed. But a clinic provides service to a patient. They have generally, I think, with under Medicaid, under OMAP's regulations, they have up to 4 months to bill the health plan, the managed care organization. As indicated, particularly with electronic billing, many bill very quickly, and the managed care plan pays back very quickly. So they have received their 40%. What we wait for in OMAP then is we get on a regular basis, but not on a monthly basis, but on something almost on a quarterly basis, we receive from the managed care plans what we call encounter data. And it's documentation on an encounter-by-encounter basis of the services that have been rendered by all of the providers in managed care. And since we don't pay claims, that's the documentation we receive that services have been rendered, and we use that information to help set payment rates into the future. The information we receive from the managed care organizations in this encounter data, however, does not include the paid amount of the claim. So that 40%, let's use the term that was $100, they paid them $40. We receive that encounter data from the managed care organization. We don't know what the paid claim amount is. We aggregate all of these encounters and then request from the federally qualified health clinics to send us a list of their billings of how much they've received. And within 30 days of our receiving all of that information, that's our internal standard, we will turn around, and what we actually do is, I mean, basically it's subtraction. What's the encounter rate that they should have been paid in the full minus what they got paid by the MCO, aggregated encounter by encounter, and send the check off. I will say, and I was talking to the staff person that works on this reimbursement settlement process, and I hope this is substantiated by some. I can't see people shaking their heads one way or the other, but I know he works with them that if there are incomplete claims data, he will actually send checks for out in advance that represent all of the claims that are cross-matched, and then work with them and send a secondary check to...
Yes.
Okay. So, I
mean, I want to emphasize that at the operational level, we're very sensitive to the timeliness of this payment relative to its importance in cash flow and its importance in the financial stability of these clinics. I don't necessarily, I agree with Dave, this is probably not the area for us to problem solve, but I think they're probably, the best thing for us to do is to get some of my staff from the Office of Medical Assistance Programs, some key leadership from both individual federally qualified health centers and the Oregon Primary Care Association, and we need to have the involvement of not only Mr. Ford and Care Oregon, but perhaps other managed care organizations, particularly those that have substantial provider relationships with these, and see if we can find a process that slows down, that narrows that lag. Because right now, what we're waiting for is to try to get the information together to be able to make the subtraction that I just described to you, and get it out. I think there are ways around it. I don't know what they are right now. In fact, I've thought of a couple here, but I'm told by my staff to stay away from operational business process planning, and that's probably the best thing. I guess what I would say is we're more than willing to take this issue on and work over the course of the next 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. We're going to be in session for a while and be able to report back to you, have we got an operating solution that we can do within administrative rule or even without administrative rule. If there's any statutory impediment, we would come back then and hopefully on a consensus basis look for whatever statutory changes might be necessary.
Now, the persistent question is electronic ability to exchange information. Now, when you were out of the room, they mentioned that there are some rural clinics that just don't have any, they don't have computers. And you mentioned that you were looking at ways to incentivize people and so on, and I think maybe that's something we need to be looking at for those that need it. But do you think the solution lies then in a more adaptable electronic system where you can move some of this stuff very quickly is the lag because the information is slow coming in from the clinics? Is it that it's slow in being evaluated while there? Or it's slow from responding, you know, but they're talking anywhere up to a year. I mean, I've heard 6 months, I've heard 6 to 9, I've heard 9 to 12, and so that there's...
It does vary, but it is a long lag, particularly for a startup clinic where you haven't got the quarterly payments in process, where you can expect a quarterly payment based upon clinic volume in a preceding period of time. We already have, you know, it's not electronic communications. Exclusively. Right now, and some of the testimony you heard earlier, there already exists electronic submission of claims from a clinic to a managed care operation, and we receive all of our encounter data from managed care operations electronically. The issue that I think that we've got to deal with, and in some cases it's going to be, some of these lags will be a result of the lack of electronics, and their absence are going to cause some delays. What I think we have is a mismatch of timing of requirements of when information mm-hmm. connects at the Office of Medical Assistance Programs. And if we can either change that timing or make some exceptions that are acceptable to the managed care organizations for these type of clinics, where their information that they have on claims payment could get to us sooner, there may be a solution there. Now, there I'm going right into trying to figure out what the solution is. But I do. I think the issue or the problem we have to try to resolve is not at this point. Electronics or not, the more electronic communication we've got, the better. But to try to look at the timing issues and see if we can narrow those so that we can make our wraparound payments faster.
Okay. Dave Ford, who testified earlier, mentioned that, and he, I think, volunteered to be there, is from Care Oregon, which you said, you know, was desirable. Mentioned visiting with other states or people from other states. Are you aware of what some other states are doing? Do you have any models in mind?
Mr. Chair, no, I don't. In fact, I would rely in part on Dave Ford to perhaps bring some of those models. And again, they're really, I think, three parties to this deal. Yeah. I mean, there's the Office of Medical Assistance Programs, there's the Managed Care Organizations, and then there's the federally qualified health centers and rural health centers. And those are the three parties. And if there's a good idea out there, I've never been ashamed to borrow one.
Good.
My dad told me that the person with a profound idea is deeply indebted to somebody.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cruz.
And that's true, Barney, because I've never had an original thought in my life. But I just help me understand this. The wraparound payments, it says right here in your sheet that they need... You reimburse clinics quarterly as required by federal regulation. Does that mean that you have to do it at least quarterly, or you can only do it quarterly? I mean, could you do it in 15 days?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I'll have to check on what the regulations. I think, based upon what I've heard, my guess is the regulation says that you have to pay at least quarterly.
Okay.
I think the issue on quarterly that we're going to get hung up on is what is the timing that we require for the submission of encounter data from the managed care plans, and that may be on a quarterly. And so, what we've got is misaligned quarters, so to speak. And there also may be some opportunities where we could perhaps even shorten it less than that if we can find some innovative ways to get information to us so we can do the cross match comparisons.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I guess part of the reason for that is, as Barney said, there were three players in the game. There's the fourth. That's federal government.
That's correct.
So,
okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I look forward and we'll have and clearly commit the staff of the Office of Medical Assistance Program to work on this issue.
Okay, and Rick will kind of check bases with you and some of the others who have volunteered. And well, I guess what we want to do is work together, you know, put a work group together, and I don't know how large or small, but we just have to have the right people.
Right.
And so Rick will kind of contact you and some of the others who have volunteered and coordinate and so on.
And if you'd like, without on a process issue, if Rick identifies the people, I know he and others are busy over here, we get the right people together and see what how much work we can get done at the department level with this group, and then come back together and report back to you.
Well, Troy volunteered, and Scott was his backup. So
we haven't been to 350 yet this year, have we?
We have not.
Good. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Any others wishing to speak at this public hearing? Okay, seeing none, we will close the public hearing. And as I mentioned earlier, we're not going to do the second part of this meeting today, so I hope none of you are here just for that. We're going to come back and do that. Did you have an interest in... Okay. We will adjourn. Okay.